Today's episode is brought to you by Angie. Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs and projects done well. Let me tell you, there's the version of it where you try to do something at home, and then there's a version of it where you have someone help you, you watch them do it the right way, and you go, thank God I didn't try to do that myself. I have fully done things around the home that I think look good, and then a bang in the night, and I wake up to a shelf collapsing, a painting falling off the wall. Like, I've seen it all go south. I own a home, and I can tell you, I know how much work it can take. Whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, you can Angie that and connect with skilled professionals to get the project done well. Right now, one of my wish lists is I want a bike for my condo in Milwaukee, and I would love to rig it up on a pulley in the ceiling because I have one of those like lofted ceilings, but I'm so scared to try that on my own. Angie has 20 years of home experience and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app. Answer a few questions and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And welcome to the Shit They Do Not Tell You What About podcast. And my name is Steve Green. And today we are joined by my wife, Nikki Limo.
Hi, I'm Nikki Limo, and you're listening to Shit They Don't Tell You.
But most significantly today, we have a very special guest. His name is Ben York. He is the VP of socials?
Ecosystem is the official term. Ecosystem.
Thank you.
Ecosystem.
And thank you so much for coming, Ben. I've been following Woo for a long time. I was first buying Woo in May of 2021. And you are by far, I think, I've been in crypto since 2013. You are by far, I think, the most communicative and clear community person I have ever dealt with in the crypto space.
Well, it's nice you put the pressure on before I bumble through this podcast.
I doubt you could bumble any more than the preamble. The preamble is pretty bumbly. Well, today we wanted to talk to you about, you know, obviously crypto. You're involved in crypto with Woo, which is an exchange. You guys do a lot of DeFi stuff. You do a lot of CeFi stuff. But starting more with the greater crypto space right now, a lot of people who listen to this show have heard me talk about crypto for many years, but I've never had somebody on like you who really knows the ins and outs of it, literally works in it every day. What, Ben York, is cryptocurrency?
It's funny because I've probably done about 50 to 100 podcasts over the years, and every single one of them have been with very like, crypto-focused people. So I don't think I've ever had that question before. I tend to step back a little bit, and I think of it more as just the digitalization of things. Even things that touch your daily life, like owning your own data, owning your own assets, and in many ways, breaking up a lot of the things of, you know, what we call the Web 2 world, where you have some company with millions of users and all of these people are generating business for this company, and like 99% of the value accrues to that company, while the people who are the content creators or the people who are building the network, you know, are just along for the ride. So that's kind of the larger scope. I mean, cryptocurrency is one asset within that. And, you know, it's popular with things like Dogecoin and Bitcoin and things like that. I think we'll get a little bit further into it. That's kind of a step back.
Yeah. And I know everyone asks you this, but my audience hasn't heard this. What got you into the space?
Oh, amazing. Well, I'm originally from the U.S., if you can't tell from the accent.
A little bit.
Also from California, San Diego. So right down the road
Me
from
too,
where you
bro.
Used to
That's crazy.
Get stuck in traffic.
Yeah.
Picking up Nikki on her first dates.
Yes. Bro, I was in Poway. I was in Rancho Bernardo.
Oh, no way. Okay.
Yeah.
I was out actually in East County. Grew up there. Alpine, if you want a name.
No kid. And I can then, picture you in Vans now, actually.
Oh, for sure. Warped Tour, all that stuff. yeah, but then in 2009, it was like right after the great financial crisis, and I was you know studying business and things like that, and everyone was just like a Debbie Downer about oh the economy is shit, there's no jobs. So I ended up just thinking like, what's the craziest thing I could do? I want to travel around the world, and after a few stops, I ended up in China. Kind of got you know stuck there for a few years, just enjoying my my young adult life. And eventually, you know, at that time, China was really driving the space. So all the big exchanges, things like Binance, right? They originate in China. All the miners, if your listeners are familiar with like, the mining scene, they're the people who secure the network. They're all from China. Mm. And then a lot of the early projects were all there too. So being that I learned the language, and then I also am, you know, a good communicator, which you mentioned earlier. I was kind of a natural fit to just volunteer in these communities. And then eventually they're like, hey, this guy, he's pretty sharp. So they started giving me roles. And eventually that's how I met Wu. And that was the first project that I really sunk my teeth into. And, you know, it's been now close to 3 years, which is an eternity in crypto.
It really is.
Yeah. That's how I got into it.
Is Wu, you know, you work at Wu. Would you say that everyone kind of sees crypto in the same way, or is there fractures even inside of it? Like, as we're in this like market downturn, right? Is there just like unbridled enthusiasm and I work for Wu and we got this, or is it really like, you know, people see the crypto community writ large and think, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I'd say the first, we're at about 170 employees now full time. And then we probably have a few other hundred in, you know, different companies that work closely with us. So it's a large ecosystem. And then I would say the early people, they were exactly like you and me, just like hungry, live and breathe crypto. And that's what you need at a startup. When you're at a startup, you need the first like 20 employees to just die for the company. And that's what gets you off the ground. That was what I tried to embody. And that's the culture I tried to instill. Passion for what we're doing first. And then all the other financial bullshit that comes with crypto is like a secondary thing.
Yeah.
I think now we've scaled a lot, and as companies grow, they start to introduce people who are very specialized. So for example, if you have like a data scientist, like maybe this person's not living and breathing Wu merch like you are.
Yes, sir.
But they're still very
a little bit.
But you know, yeah, they're still very dedicated. And, you know, we're trying to attract talent from some of the top companies in the world, whether they're financial firms like Goldman Sachs or they're, you know, Google, you know, these type of companies. So we're now leveraging a lot of their experience and combining that with our passion. And I think the culture though is very strong. Everyone who talks about us, who met us, it's like, wow, these guys, good sense of ethics and a good sense of culture, which is important to the brand.
What would you say DeFi is?
Okay, DeFi is kind of a subsection of crypto, which is basically focused on taking the old financial markets and then opening them up to everybody, and at the same time making it, I guess we say interoperable, which means this application can communicate with another application, right? Which is something we don't have in these like walled gardens that are your bank or Facebook, right? So DeFi is about putting your assets on there and then doing everything you do in the financial world, whether it's earning yield or lending or borrowing, you know, saving these type of things. So that's, I guess, DeFi in a nutshell.
Do you see DeFi as a disruptor? Is that kind of a narrative, or is it something that you think has legs?
Oh, I absolutely think it has legs, because you just, even this year, I mean, you had the whole Silicon Valley Bank, you know, blowing up. And a lot of that is exactly what people in crypto experienced with FTX last year, right? Where you have some centralized company who's, you know, controlling your assets, and then they're loaning those out to somebody else who's loaning those out to someone else. And,
yeah.
You know,
classic.
So, yeah. I mean, that's what DeFi is. I mean, you can go to the blockchain and you can see exactly where the assets are sitting, right? And that's the most important value.
Okay, Ben, what is a decentralized exchange exactly?
Well, okay, so an exchange is basically a platform that lets you buy or sell assets, right? So you can kind of equate that to, you know, if you're investing on something like Robinhood, right, that would be something like an exchange. And so a decentralized exchange is just one where everybody self-custodies. I guess for people who don't know, that basically means your assets are in your wallet, which you control. And then you interact with the decentralized exchange by sending it to something on the blockchain, which then triggers some response, and then something else gets sent back to your wallet. So you never actually have to go stand in line at a bank, put your assets there, and then go log into the web portal, you know, and deal with it there. And then in the hope that when you're done investing or doing whatever, the bank or the institution will still have your money waiting for you. And there's a lot of other benefits because, you know, they eventually become something like Legos where you can just build on top. You can use things like aggregators where you don't care which exchange you're actually sending it to. You just want the best price. So you put it in and it breaks up your order and sends it to a bunch of different places. But, you know, these are more complicated topics, probably not the most exciting thing in the world to talk about, but it's one of the businesses that we do.
What excites you the most about crypto?
I guess it does feel like you're always on the brink of a revolution, right? I think that got me into it a little bit, like the ideology behind Bitcoin and, you know, the federal government no longer can print your money out of existence. You know, inflation's been a hot topic in the news for good reason. You know, it was 8 or 9% in the U.S. People are losing that each year. And then with crypto, it's a lot more transparent. So that's more of the bigger picture. But I also love the more, you know, we call it like the degen side of things, like degenerate side. It's kind of a euphemism just for how if you have an idea and you just want to go for it, right? You can act on that very quickly, right? And the cycles for the market are very, very fast. So one day you're up and one day you're down, and that opportunity is constantly coming around. So, you know, you see people who got into the space maybe 2 years ago and then they've done very well for themselves, right? And so seeing that, like, that's not something that's so easy to do in the traditional world.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, dude, in the traditional world, it just moves at a snail's pace. I can't even get interested in traditional finance anymore.
Exactly. Exactly. It's like watching a game of golf or something. And,
for real. No hate to the golfer fans out there. It's just a bad sport. Objectively, bad sport. Ben, isn't it bad and very, very wrong that people can't see what people in crypto are doing with their money? Isn't that a crime, Ben York?
In what sense could you?
Well, in like the DeFi sense, right? Like a lot
isn't
of
isn't that what drug dealers do?
Yeah, with the cash.
Isn't it for like, drug dealers?
Exactly.
To do shady transactions.
Yeah. Every time I get pushback on crypto, it's always this topic, right? It's always like, why do you need the privacy?
Yeah, I mean, I think I don't know how old you are, Steve, but I'm about 35, so. Okay, we're about the same age. I mean, we went through the internet. We went through things like chat rooms, and my parents were saying, oh, you're going to get abducted by pedophiles. You know, like we went through this whole phase with the internet. And like privacy and censorship and these sort of topics are never going to go away from our society. If we do allow that to happen, it's a massive failure of the society. And, you know, for the financial world, I think it's no different. You know, right now, a lot of the issues are around, like, you know, money laundering or getting around some of the sanctions that maybe the U.S. has, you know, leveraged around the world. Those are more big concerns, I think, for governments. But on the, you know, on the day to day stuff, it's a lot easier to buy drugs with cash. You know, trust me, I was just in Bangkok for a month, and you know, nobody's using crypto to do that sort of thing, right? So, yeah, I mean, this is definitely overblown, but it's something that at the early stage of an industry, you know, the innovators are there along with the people who are more opportunistic and maybe in it for the wrong reasons. So, and that's why you see a lot of these like cash grabs. You know, we call them rug pulls and things like that. So, I mean, it just if crypto in general just makes it easier to store your money, to move your money, to transact. So that's always going to lead to concerns. And I think we'll get a handle on that, you know, working with some sort of regulation. And it's either going to be, you know, hopefully a scenario where innovation will outpace the need for restriction, right? And long term, I think it's going to be fine, right? We're going to have this digital assets, owning your own data, these sort of things. That's going to happen.
Yeah, I think so too. But kind of piggybacking off of that, right? You're inside of a larger crypto project. You guys issued a token. Another thing that I get questions about is like, well, why do you need a token? You guys are just copying Bitcoin if you're making another token. You know those arguments, right? What do you say about that?
Exactly. Well, I think any sort of asset can be a token, right? It doesn't have to be a currency. Like what Bitcoin tries to do, what Dogecoin, these kind of things, they're intended to be some sort of like method of payment for something that will, you know, that's probably not the easiest route to success because most people don't need this in their lives. They're happy to slide their credit cards or do whatever. You know, what our token, it's more of a utility token, you know, so we think of breaking up the company, and then accessing the company with this token. So you can get services and the more that you contribute to this network, the more opportunities there are to earn in this token. And that's important. I mean, for people who know things like Ethereum, right, they recently moved to proof of stake, right? So, you know, owning Ethereum, it's kind of like you own a stake of the network. And so all the value that accrues on that network accrues not to shareholders or the board of directors, you know, it's accruing to token holders. So that's like the theme of like democratization of businesses.
And so when you guys issue a token, how does that benefit the community or, and how does that, or versus, you know, some company with shares?
Well, I think it's like, why would anyone care, right? If a, you know, a bank opens up in your town and they're offering these services and like, unless you need those services, you're not going to care. Right. But with the token, it brings along the idea of like community. And then you start to realize that if I do contribute, if I do participate, if I am creating value, then I will be rewarded. Right. So that's like the token economy. And, you know, this method, I think we're going to be seeing, you know, a lot more. At the very beginning, you know, you see some of these items like airline miles. It's the same concept. It just exists in like a walled garden, right? You take a flight, you get some airline miles, you buy something and get the VIP lounge, you earn more miles, right? So that's value accrual to the consumer of the airline. But the problem is if you suddenly don't like that airline, it's meaningless. It's worthless because you can't take that to some other airline, right? So that's how, you know, cryptocurrency and the ideas of interoperability what I believe clearly the way forward.
Is there anybody working on that use case, by the way? Because that's one of the most kick-ass ones, I think, in the space. Like being able to take your, like being able to basically open up, you know, points and rewards and all that stuff and to be able to democratize those and let people use them and sell them even would be incredible.
Yeah, it's a tricky one because, you know, like the airline industry is very difficult to disrupt and it's, you know, they're not in a hurry to relinquish, you know, the hold they have. But it's one of those things where once it happens first, then everybody has to follow. So I think, you know, down the line, I mean, even we're seeing things like social networks now where Twitter, you know, is owned by Jack Dorsey. He was a big Bitcoin believer. Now it's Elon Musk, who's an even bigger like cryptocurrency believer.
He's a Doge boy.
Yeah, he is. And we're starting to see like social networks. You know, I think this is probably one of the most obvious use cases where, you know, if you're out there hustling, making videos and making memes and, you know, just generating a ton of attention for the network, you know, you deserve your share of that, right? And then that network value should be able to move more freely throughout the internet, right? So, I think this is just a matter of time before people become comfortable. I think some of the big changes we're going to have to see in the next 10 years, and that actually some really smart people are working on, is things like abstracting the account. Because right now, if you've ever used crypto, you know, it's like the first thing you do, you set up a wallet, you have to write down these 12 words, and you have to hope to God you don't lose them or write them down or wrong or something, or if somebody finds it, they can just steal all your money. Like these sort of things are not good user experience. And so when this sort of problem gets solved to where anyone can just set up an account really quickly and they still maintain control in some ways, like the private key gets split up and put on separate cloud servers. And, you know, at that point, suddenly the line between cryptocurrency and those airline points, it's a lot more similar, right? Because you don't have to worry about like, oh, what if I, you know, lose my phone and then all my stuff's gone forever, right? So these are some things that we're seeing being built alongside, and they will help bring in these next use cases. Because right now it's not ready. I'll be the first one to tell you, like, there is no way that my mom is going to, you know, put her, you know, part of her life savings into cryptocurrency. And I accept that. And I think it's good because it shows we're still early. There's a lot of room to contribute to this industry. And going back to what Nikki said, like, what excites you is, I guess, you know, you're doing something that's still meaningful. Like, if you're just pushing papers on a desk 9 to 5, it's a lot harder to influence the company and the industry in a way that's meaningful.
How do you see the economic conditions we're in right now with inflation and crypto as a potential disruptor? Is that a narrative too, or are how do you see it?
Oh, it's for sure a narrative. It's always going to be a narrative, right? And I'm not that close to this kind of like what we call macro investing. And, you know, I'm much more focused on like my day-to-day role, which is growing Wu Network. But there's no doubt that as more governments, you know, make mistakes, as more people become aware, like, we're seeing people be a lot more financially literate in the last 20 years. Like, when we were kids, your parents, they might have had like a retirement, like 401k or something like that, but, you know, they weren't investing in Tesla or, you know, Amazon. These sort of things happen kind of more recently. Now you have a lot of people younger than us, you know, in high school even, who are stock portfolios, crypto portfolios. And so as these people get older, right, they grew up with crypto, they'll be used to it. And they're also more aware of, you know, what happens in the financial system. What does this inflation number actually mean? And that's when we could see the effect. It might not be one of those, like, all at once, everybody wakes up and goes, shit, that crypto is a good idea. But, you know, it's probably going to happen.
Do you think that Ethereum, like the layer 2 landscape, is there anything about it that you're like, that project? Or do you see it all as kind of one big landmass and it's all very good for the ecosystem?
For us, I think we're a lot more agnostic. So, you know, we service traders, essentially. We service people who want to trade at the best price. And wherever they go, you know, we can be there. And however, personally, you know, like I was pretty early into the Ethereum DeFi space. I was actually quite lucky because one of my earlier roles, they assigned me to write about DeFi. And, you know, that's how I got to learn about it. But even back to like 2017, when I was getting into the industry, like, there was a lot of things that were billed as like the next Ethereum killer. Like, this is going to kill Ethereum. It's going to be better than Ethereum. Yeah, I mean, you can't, you know, there's something to be said for how conservative Bitcoin, conservative Ethereum, their teams, the foundations leading these and the developers that contribute, how conservative they are. And then how they do prioritize decentralization in a lot of ways, whereas some of the smaller projects, you know, it's just a core team and they do whatever the hell they want. So I think we'll never get away from Ethereum. Anything that seems to be coming is like this year, if you're following like these layer twos, it's basically something built on top of Ethereum to make it faster and cheaper to make transactions. You know, it all adds value back to Ethereum as a base layer. So yeah, and eventually I think the name Ethereum, it might be less important. You know, it could be something like Amazon Web Services versus Google Cloud. You don't actually know what this app we're using to record the stream is running on right now, right? It could be either of those two.
Definitely not decentralized, I'll tell you that.
No, that's probably a good thing based on the current tech. But eventually that will become less important. And it'll just be like these networks with these layer 2 scaling solutions on top. And everything just works. That's the dream, right?
That's the dream. I think, like you said, I think we're a couple of years away from that. But that is what I think, man, when I look at Wu too, like, you know, when I see what you guys are doing for back end liquidity, that's what got me into you guys, like, big time. Can you describe what liquidity is and the need for backend liquidity?
Sure, sure. Nikki, I don't know if this is something you're as interested in, but I'll definitely answer this one for Steve.
I was going to ask that same question, to be honest.
So yeah, I talk about question. It all the time.
I want to know about backend liquidity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think one of the biggest problems that faced cryptocurrency is like how available it is and how reliable it is, because, you know, big investors, they don't want to buy something and then when they want to exit their investment, they're not able to do that just because there's not enough assets on the market at the price they want, right? And or in order to sell it, they have to go to one specific venue, and that specific venue is under investigation by the SEC or whatever. And so their company framework doesn't allow them to even interact with that one, right? So this is more of a modern, like this year theme. In the past, it was just you had a bunch of shitty exchanges, for lack of a better word, and people were forced to do business there because there's nowhere else, right?
Shout out Bittrex.
Right. So, yeah. So originally we were incubated by a company. They're called Kronos Research. And what they specialize in is market making, which is providing liquidity on both sides so that if Nikki or Steve wants to go buy something, there's somebody willing to sell it to them at the market price. And if they want to sell it, there's someone willing to buy it back, right? That's market making at its core. And these market makers at the very early stage, they had this same problem because their only opportunities to make markets and earn money is to go to these shitty exchanges. And then some of them, you know, they didn't have any users, so no one was buying from them. And some of the other exchanges were getting hacked. And then some of these other exchanges were just shady. So they were very reluctant to be everywhere, right? So then the idea came for just having one network. And this company would go and they would be trading on these exchanges. And then they would provide liquidity from these exchanges into what is now Wu Network. So if you were a user or an institution or just a trader and you wanted to buy with the best liquidity in the market, you would come to us, and then you don't have to deal with all the other bullshit in the market. So that was kind of the idea behind it. You know, that's still what we're doing today. Really focused on making sure that if you trade at Wu, the price you're paying for a transaction, which is actually made up of a couple of things, including like fees. It also includes like the price that they're willing to sell assets to you at. Net of all of this, like you get the best price. That's our mission in a lot of ways. So that's back-end liquidity. That's what we're doing, Nikki. Does it thrill you?
It does. I'm glad that that's what back-end liquidity is, and it's not as fecal as I pictured. I did want to ask about – I took you a second. I did want to ask about I hear a lot of bitching about gas prices, and not for your car, but for tokens or cryptocurrencies. Does that have anything to do – like if I wanted to liquidate some of my assets, are there gas prices? Is that something that people are going? Sorry, I know Steve's cringing at me.
I'm not cringing, I'm actually just trying to understand your question.
I don't know anything about crypto. I defer to Steve. Like if I had to invest my own money into crypto, all I know how to do is put it into Bitcoin. So a lot of the more complex stuff is like I just need to learn bits and pieces of it. And the number one thing.
She won't be able to sell my Wu, Ben. She won't be able to sell my Wu.
No, basically. I won't. I have to go through Kenny.
Yeah, my little brother. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, like I'm sure he has some sort of safety hatch plan, like if something happens to him. But anyway.
He might be plotting against you.
He probably is. He'd be smart too.
Kenny?
I have a lot of Wu.
He should.
Yeah.
It's a good question, Nikki.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, that's related to something we were talking about earlier. And I think the early networks like Bitcoin, Ethereum, they just had no idea about the throughput, you know, that would be required of these networks. And it's hard because everything is a trade-off between how decentralized you want it to be, how fast you want it to be, how secure you want it to be. And so like to make something more decentralized, you have to bring in more people to validate things. And it, when you bring more people, like it just takes more time for them to all reach a what we call consensus, right? So that's a lot of the issue around that is it's just there's not a very high throughput, which means we can't have like Visa where like millions of people can purchase something at the same time. The network works perfectly. So most people complain about gas prices. They're talking about Bitcoin or Ethereum, and it tends to spike a lot during bull markets when everybody's crazy about crypto and they're buying and selling everything and it's just madness. Mm-hmm. And then they don't mind as much because it's but one good analogy I actually heard on this is it's kind of like living in LA, and I think Steve can address this as well, or living in New York. Like when you're living in these cities, you do have the best restaurants, the best entertainment, the best nightclubs, you know, everything. And so you pay a premium for that. And that is rent prices or tolls or parking, right? So that's what these early networks, that's what the people on there are doing. And then maybe there's people who don't want to live in, you know, LA, maybe they're happy living in Bakersfield or somewhere else. And, you know, these gas costs are a lot less for them, but they're using a network that's maybe not as secure or maybe doesn't have as good of apps on it. So that's kind of the current landscape. And then the goal, what we were talking about earlier with like layer two, is to make networks that don't compromise on security and decentralization, but they're just as fast, right? And they're just as cheap. And so maybe in 2 to 4 years, we'll have that. And then suddenly, the whole ecosystem just becomes a lot more usable, better user experience.
That's such a good way of putting it, that is why you're the community guy at Woo and I am the unaffiliated hype man.
I know a lot about like how interested Steve is in Woo, but I just don't know a lot about Woo itself. So it's interesting to hear the ins and outs of...
We're going to really get to Woo as well. Uh-huh. Real quick though, another real quick landscape question that I have is... You know, well, also Woo related. When FTX goes down, you guys made a big move. You guys basically go, hey, we're going to open up, you know, we're going to let you guys see what's in our reserves. I think it's an industry first. Am I wrong about that?
Yeah, well, the way we did it was with a real-time dashboard where people can see. We benefited a little bit in that we're a little bit younger than some of the other big players in the space. So we didn't have years and years of bad practices and, you know, maybe we call it like cutting corners, like some of the other big exchanges have. So it's much more difficult for something like that to happen at a bigger exchange. But it's a huge opportunity for us because FTX was positioned a little bit similarly in the market to us in that they service, their tagline was for traders, by traders, right? And so they were servicing a lot of the users that we plan to service or we currently are servicing. So when they blew up, it's like now we have an opportunity to look at what they did really well, because they did a lot of things really well. And that's why they had such spectacular growth up until the point where they started lending out money like a traditional bank, right? Yeah. So it's like if we take those good parts and then what did they do wrong? Well, they weren't transparent. They didn't show people where their assets are, right? Like, can we do this? And at first it was kind of like from a communication standpoint or a PR standpoint, you know, typically when there's this big crisis, you want to step back a little bit and like let things settle because everyone's angry, everybody's scared and everyone's emotional and you don't want to just be the first one out there because you get your head blown off. So, you know, actually I was a little bit more tentative, but our CEO, he was like, we have to do this, right? We have to be first. If the business model is going to work, this is how we got to do it. And I was really impressed at that time by that action. And, you know,
I was blown away, bro. Mm-hmm. And you guys made it so that you can view the balance sheets in real time every 15 minutes of updates.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And we're still planning to build a lot more interesting things on that coming soon. But yeah, I think now we definitely have our position, right? Where it's best for trading, best prices, lowest fees, and most transparent. Like that's what we want people to think of Woo as, Right. And, you know, maybe the other exchanges, maybe they have, you know, more shit coins or more NFTs or more, you know, other things that appeal to people and can maybe more like get rich quicks type stuff. But, you know, we want to focus on the core business and we want to focus on doing things the right way. So that's what we're trying to do.
When you're doing that, like that, that's because it's such a big move that you guys made. Internally, when FTX is going down, what's the mood at Woo? Is it like our biggest competitor is going down? Fuck yeah. Or is it like this sucks a little bit because obviously market wide, it was annihilation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, anytime financial companies start to collapse, you have this thing called the contagion where suddenly you find out this guy was actually lending money to them and they're gone too. And who were they servicing? Because now suddenly they have a big hole in their balance sheet. So we were definitely not like pumping our fists. Like we were definitely worried like what's going to happen next? Who's going to go bankrupt? Like are some of like the biggest trading firms in the world, are they going to go under? And then, you know, what happens to liquidity? Is Binance also screwed? Is Coinbase screwed? You don't know, right? And that could be like a doomsday scenario. And then on top of that, you also have at the back of your head, like, oh shit, what are regulators going to do now? Like, what are the governments going to come in and just start chopping off heads?
Surprisingly, kind of in the US right now, a little bit, but not for you guys.
Kind of, yeah. Well, we don't service US customers. So,
exactly.
nothing we do.
Much to your benefit.
We actually made the right move there. It was very criticized at the start, but
I was the first guy booing, and I'm the happiest guy in the world about it. I was the first guy booing, though. I'll tell you that right now. I own that right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it, like growing a business, it's kind of like going onto a playground for the first time. It's like, how many fights do you want to pick? Who do you want to pick them with? And we just didn't think we wanted to devote resources to picking a fight. Not a fight, just dealing with this constant legal battle. And that turned out to be the right move. But actually, going back to that FTX thing, when it crashed, Bitcoin barely did, dropped from like, I think, 20K to 16K. And we're suddenly like, okay, this is it. This is good, right? Because the second biggest exchange can blow out. A bunch of other CeFi, lending platforms blew out. And the market barely reacted to it. So that's when we all kind of looked around and thought, okay, maybe we've hit our market bottom for this cycle, and maybe things are turning around. And so far, if you look at today, Bitcoin from 16, now it's up around 30,000. That looks to be the case, right? So fingers crossed that nothing else is going to come of all this. And yeah, I think in general, the market just, it's very saturated with this bad news. It's like the regulation stuff. It's kind of like the boy who cried wolf. If the US regulators say something one time, the first time, everybody panics and shits themselves. And then after they've done it for the 10th year in a row, like investors just don't care anymore. It's already priced in. Yeah. And so that's hopefully where we're at now. And, you know, regulators also realize that. And so then things, they have to work together more with companies to try to make sure they're operating in a good way.
So we're going to go on a quick break real quick. But when we come back, we're going to go deep on Woo. I got a bunch of Woo questions with Ben York. We will BRBLOL. Buy whatever we tell you to buy. Thank you so much.
Today's episode is brought to you by Angie. Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs and projects done well. Let me tell you, there's the version of it where you try to do something at home, and then there's a version of it where you have someone help you, you watch them do it the right way, and you go, thank God I didn't try to do that myself. I have fully done things around the home that I think look good, and then a bang in the night, and I wake up to a shelf collapsing, a painting falling off the wall. Like, I've seen it all go south. I own a home, and I can tell you, I know how much work it can take. Whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, you can Angie that and connect with skilled professionals to get the project done well. Right now, one of my wish lists is I want a bike for my condo in Milwaukee, and I would love to rig it up on a pulley in the ceiling because I have one of those like lofted ceilings, but I'm so scared to try that on my own. Angie has 20 years of home experience and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app. Answer a few questions and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly. which means you can take care of any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.
Hey, thanks for listening to our podcast. We just want to take a break to tell you to, like, thanks for listening to our podcast. And if you want to rate it, that would be really awesome for us.
Like, listen, we're on break. We're not talking to you like podcast hosts right now. We're just talking to you like people.
As a friend.
And we just want to say, please rate the show because it helps out huge amounts.
Like, we're not desperate. We're, like, kind of desperate.
We're giving shout outs right now to all the people who are giving it ratings. So huge shout out right now to Brian Jorgensen. That was sick of you, dude. Thank you. God bless. Huge shout out right now to Mark. Mark W. in Springfield, Connecticut.
Back to our podcast.
Jenny Blight.
Hey, back to our podcast.
In Tuscany,
and
Florida.
Back to our podcast.
God bless you. Thank you.
Steven.
Thank you for supporting the show.
All right, and we're back. And you may have noticed I haven't said very much during this episode. That's because I'm a very, very, not even a beginner. I'd say just I know nothing at all. I'm just soaking a lot of this in. I think that it's just so rare that we get to have an expert on the show. I, of course, have a lot of beginner-y questions, but I think the best place to get those baseline questions answered if you're also in the beginner boat is to go check out Crypto Corner at patreon.com/sticky, S-T-I-K-K-I. Steve does more than 2 hours sometimes, but at least a 2-hour live stream every single week, every single Tuesday. He answers every question that anyone has on the stream about everything. So I think that's really great for those of you in my boat. But in this episode, I'm so impressed and intrigued to hear what someone with so much expertise has to say on a more complex level that I think some of you more advanced people in crypto might want to hear. So I'm just here being a student and listening with Franklin.
And if you're listening and not watching, Ben, I promise my wife does not look like a melted candle in real life. Her feed is coming weird.
Is it? And mine
she is
it
a very
fine.
Attractive woman. I will have
I'm
you
not.
Know.
my okay. My mask is coming off. My Meta mask is.
Yeah,
yeah. Was exactly. That a thing? I used a crypto term.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to fit in. I'm trying to be cool. Yeah. Thank you.
So we're back with Ben, and this is what I call Ben's 30 minutes of pure financial advice. So here we go. No, not at all. So Ben, what, when you're out and about, I go through this all the time because I'm wearing Woo stuff everywhere I go. People are like, hey, what is Woo? And I'm always like, I wonder how Ben answers this. Like, what's your elevator pitch on Woo for people, for layman's?
To be honest, it's a bit of a too many steps to take. So, you know, like I'll often meet people, like maybe it's like an Uber driver. They're like, oh, you in crypto? I'm into crypto. And then,
yeah,
you know,
I've been there.
I won't go straight into the Woo side. I usually just, you know, answer any questions they have and try to be helpful. And I think, you know, showing them that not everyone's like this massive fanboy, you know, focusing on the purely like financial side of things, which is like, oh, I'm going to be a millionaire. Right. So I just try to do that as well. You know, it's funny you mentioned that today I was at the office and there's this company that brings around lunches, right. And you can like order off them. It's like a typical office thing. Right. And, the guy is like, he looked at us kind of, I think he noticed some things like, oh, you guys are crypto traders. And it's like, well, we actually run an exchange. Like, oh, I trade crypto too. And it was just really funny to see that these sort of people are more and more common, I think, than they were like 3 or 4 years ago.
Right?
And yeah. So, you know, like we joke, we showed him the app and the website and he was all stoked about it and he was going to sign up. So I think with some people, you know, if they show a bit of understanding, then I might give them a quick pitch. I might just say, you know, we're doing everything that, you know, you trade on some other exchange, but you know, we try to do it a little bit better, and more transparent and, you know, doing things the right way. And yeah, I think especially in certain parts of the world, you see it a lot. The funny story, I was actually, you know, we were in Thailand and then, I was just by the beach and there's this total, like this is this little stall and the guy in there. And in this part of Thailand, there's not enough electricity. So they black out during the noon hours during the day. Like there's no electricity. So the credit card scanner wouldn't work.
Oh, shit.
So I just asked him, I was like, will you take crypto? And he's like, yeah, crypto. I have Binance. And I was like, all right, I'll send you some USDT from my MetaMask.
No way.
Yeah. So I think in different parts of the world, especially, like it's more common. So this conversation you asked me, like, I think I'm going to have to keep upgrading my pitch because people are just going to become more and more knowledgeable as we go.
So true. I wrote a bunch of movies and stuff, and the pitches are so important, bro. Getting in and out of your point quickly and letting everyone know how sick your thing is. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Something real valuable to it. How'd you guys land on Woo as a name? Half the time I tell people I love Woo, they think I'm in some shitcoin, which is so ironic because, like, you guys are actually a really deep, like, liquidity provider, like all these awesome CeFi and DeFi options. How do you come at Woo? And is there any controversy internally about the name?
No, to be honest, the CEO, Jack, I mean, he came up with the name. He's pretty good at coming up with these sort of things. He has a creative mind. He's more of like the visionary type, which is what you want in a CEO. So Woo in particular, you know, he made the joke that it's kind of like the sound you make when you make a good trade, right? And you close that trade. And it's also in a lot of other foreign languages, like in Korean, there's a lot of positive images that come with this name, and Chinese as well. So it's a very like universal name. It's easy to remember. I don't think we're looking to change it. I mean, maybe, you know, something like Go Trade.
You should change it.
I don't think you should. I love it. No. When I talk to people, they immediately assume it's some shitcoin because, you know how mm-hmm. shitcoins are. Like, they just make it, mm-hmm. it's like a mm-hmm. noise. mm-hmm. You know, yeah. At least it's not Woo Inu.
Mm-hmm. You know. Well, hopefully we can help you out by, you know, doing better on the branding and awareness, and then people, they'll hear about it first and then they'll learn about it. And then when they see you walking down the street, they'll be like, oh shit, it's the Iceman. Look
bro,
at him.
Yeah. Bro, the Iceman's been carrying you guys for 2 years now almost. This will be 2 years in May. I've been carrying the Woo marketing for 2 years just about.
How many chains of Woo do you have? I mean, not blockchain, but the chains behind... Behind
I
you.
Got them no, all over the place.
I'm asking Ben wow. how many he has.
Oh, yeah, true. Exactly.
How many does he have? He should have a lot because he's an executive. Maybe
I'll send you one,
Ben. Yeah, you should send him
one. I'll send him one.
Yeah, I actually do not have. I'm actually wearing a shirt right now.
I see it.
But most of what I get is stuff that we hand out at like conferences or things. So it's easy to carry and you can print hundreds of them. So it's things like shirts, luggage tags, things like that.
You're kind of a normie speakers. Compared to me then. Yeah, totally.
I'm very much a normie. Yeah. And I'm in awe when I see the Iceman walking around in the drip.
I know. I can tell. For you, when is something just a narrative? And when is it something that is addressing a market need, kind of like what you guys are up to?
I think every narrative is an opportunity for something, right? And so, like, currently now you have the L2 narrative. It's a very strong one, right? And you can see the people who are developing these L2s, these are not companies that popped up in the last 2 months to try to create this narrative, right? So that would be one. Other narratives are things like AI. Like, obviously, I think everyone in the world now is aware what AI can do thanks to ChatGPT and things like that. So I think, yeah, I mean, in crypto, from a product development standpoint, we try to be very agile. We don't try to like sit down and say, okay, the next 3 years, this is what's going to look like. We're going to start working on this, and then we're going to work on that. It's more like, what is the most immediate needs for our core users? How do we make their lives better, right? A little bit of a focus on like the long-term strategy, where we're trying to go, what is our mission? But then a third part is definitely like, what are the new things? What are the exciting things that are happening now that didn't exist 4 months ago? And then is it something that's sustainable? Is it something that we can build on? And I think, you know, going back, it's hard to pick too many trends, maybe like the dog coins or the food coins. Like, those were stupid narratives. But even things like NFTs, is like a separate type of token that has unique aspects to it, right? Like, there's a lot of really interesting things you can do there in terms of like, connecting with your users and creating this sort of brand identity, right? So, to answer your question, every time a new narrative comes up, it's usually pretty exciting, although it is distracting. I would definitely say, especially during a bull market, and then something pops up and then people are like, oh, dude, you got to get that. That happened nonstop in the last bull market. Great example was UST. Like, if you guys are familiar with Luna.
Extremely, trust me. Okay. I was captain of the ship that was going down, brother. The ship was on fire. We were going down.
Yeah, well, it was like a $40 billion failure that happened overnight. And they were, you know, it was basically like locking up your assets and getting 20% yields, which is completely out of thin air, to mint this stable coin. And then everybody wanted this stable coin. And that was mainly due to like the financial success of Luna, the coin. And from a trader's perspective, we're like, why would anyone want to trade their assets against a stable coin that's not proven, right? I mean, that doesn't make any sense. And then, you know, just after months and months of dealing with community, and, you know, we're trying to figure out ways to work with that ecosystem without putting our business in jeopardy, right? It kind of fell apart. And I wouldn't say we expected it to fall apart. It was not that. We weren't sitting there shorting it, waiting for it to fall. I think we were just, we want to see things be more battle tested over time. You know, that's one of the good things about this type of like software development where everyone can see the code. Like if you can hack this thing, someone's going
to
hack it.
Credit to you. So that's, exactly. That's what I said when Luna died. I said, credit to them, dude. Credit to the attackers. That's how this kind of works, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So, you know, we get that a lot. People, there's some new trend. Guys, you got to do this. And we can't be too distracted by it, but then we still have to have a very open mind. And I think having one of the first questions you asked me tonight, like, are people in Woo, are they passionate? I think that is the key factor, because if we're actively learning in our spare time and thinking about it, we're much better at grasping these narratives than if we're just showing up to our day job and doing what's told of us. Right?
Hey, how do you, so you guys, you know, trade free, right? That's literally on my hoodie. Okay. How do you support that model? A lot of people always ask me that.
Mm-hmm. Right. So this is kind of a nuanced question to answer, because there's some degree of understanding how financial markets work to explain that. I think a very simple way, it's actually not that simple, Nikki. I apologize if this doesn't make any sense at all. Like going back to that original question, like how do Nikki, your question about the liquidity on the back end. If the price that we're willing to sell at and the price that we're willing to buy at, if it's too close together, then people who are very fast and have inside knowledge are able to exploit that. On other platforms, you have a whole bunch of market makers, and then you have these people who are exploiting these market makers. And so to compensate these market makers for getting exploited, they charge fees. They charge really high fees, and then they give a rebate to the market makers. So they're basically subsidizing them. They're paying them to not lose as much money on certain actions, right? So what we did is we created an environment where we don't have these toxic firms, which is called like high frequency trading firms. If you're familiar with things like Robinhood, you know there's a firm behind it called Citadel, and Citadel is one of the most widely successful financial companies in the world over the last decade. And so we basically create an environment where companies who have very advanced technology, insider knowledge, and speed, they wouldn't be able to exploit the model, so that we can keep the price, the buy and sell close, without charging the end user, that would be you, Nikki, high fees, and then have to refund the market maker. So that's basically how we do it. Then the market maker is still earning money, because every time that there is a trade, then they're able to earn a very small percentage of that. That's called a spread. And then they are able to split that with us. Now, the curveball is on this, Steve, that as we're growing, we're seeing more opportunities. We're seeing things that didn't exist in 2020. Like there's more assets that are popping up that no one's ever heard of. More different types of products like perpetual swaps, like which are futures. If people follow this at all,
you guys are doing really well there.
Well, exactly. But there's just a lot more assets we need to market make for. So, you know, over time we might open it up to allow more market makers and adjust the business model. But basically, to go back and TLDR this whole thing, I mean, we try to keep things very efficient by keeping out toxic flow, toxic participants who are extracting value from the system without contributing very much value at all.
Hey, what's toxic flow?
Well, toxic flow would just be those very fast firms capitalizing on certain advantages. Right. So it's not you, Steve. It's not Nikki going in there and saying, hey, I got, you know, $5,000, I want to buy this with it. It's people with a lot of capital who go in and using very advanced technology and things like colocation, where they place servers very close to other servers, so they're faster than, you know, other people. I think that's probably the easiest way to answer that without going into a
like
very
people
complex.
People front running and all that kind of stuff.
Front running is a form of toxic flow, but that more impacts the user. That's more like you put a buy order and then somebody else sees that buy order and jumps in front of it so that you move your buy order forward and then they sell it to you. And then they, you know, that's a different sort of thing. But that is also toxic.
I got a sandwich attack before. It wasn't fun. I'll tell you that. It wasn't fun.
Is it like they're making money off of like attrition? Is it attrition? Like just like thin arbitrage? Yeah. Where it's just like thin margins of like mm-hmm. just thin value, like over time built up, like that's what they're capitalizing on. The toxic flow
exactly.
people. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
When, you know, when people talk about you guys were incubated by Binance. How come you guys aren't competing with Binance? Right. Another question I get quite a bit.
Well, we weren't incubated. We were invested by Binance Labs. We're, still quite close with them. I think, like Binance and CZ, these types of people, they're very collaborative. And they realized very early on that if they're going to take on this task of bringing a billion people into crypto, they're going to need help from other builders in the space, from other people lobbying the governments and the regulators to open up and be more progressive. And, you know, he definitely appreciates, I should say Binance appreciates how innovative we are. And also part of our model, because I mentioned how we aggregate from other, I didn't mention this, but the liquidity backend, we're actually taking liquidity on other exchanges and providing it to users on WEX so that when people take that on WEX, we actually hedge that back onto exchanges like Binance, right? So Binance actually gets transaction volume from us. So in that sense, it doesn't matter as much for the purpose of this call, but Binance would benefit from, you know, us getting a lot of volume, right? Maybe indirectly. Our relationship with BSC, that's their own blockchain, is very strong. We're a very early builder. They put us in this like most valuable builder program where we mentored other projects. We have our partner Kronos, who has a venture capital firm themselves. They invest in a lot of projects who are also building on BSC. So I think in general, like just to take a step back, crypto is very collaborative and you can have these discussions between companies that on the outside look like competitors. But in reality, if it's just me and Steve and Nikki and we're selling assets on two different exchanges versus Steve and his extended family and all his friends and all his crypto buddies, right? And like all of them trading on different exchanges, then we think of like it as a big pie, right? And your slice of the pie is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Binance is not going to make any money by cutting us off and taking our market share. They're going to make their next whatever $100 billion or whatever they're trying to make by getting billions of people into crypto. And the only way they're going to do that is by working with other people who have the same, you know, value innovation, this sort of mindset alongside them.
I mean, you guys are growing so fast with DeFi. I've honestly been blown away by it. Like when I look at Woo, right, you guys are number three, I think, on Avalanche right now in volume. Mm-hmm. How the hell did you guys grow that fast? And is it the AVAX community? Is it like a strategy on your part? What are you guys doing behind the scenes to make that happen? Because I can see it.
So basically, DeFi is still very early, right? And then what we did is we brought some of our liquidity provision strategies to – it's basically simulating the liquidity on our exchange. We simulate it on chain. So that's a lot of jargon. But basically, if you're trying to swap on chain – the price that you get trading through our decentralized exchange is better than what you get on most other decentralized exchanges on major tokens. Not if you're trading like some dog food coin, right? But if like Bitcoin, Ethereum, stable coins like USDT, USDC, the price that we provide is usually more competitive. So basically the only strategy was quite simple. I mean, we just went to the chains where there are a lot of users and volume. We plugged in and then we talked to all the aggregators in the space who people go to their website and then they want to make a swap. Like, and even Nikki talked about MetaMask. There's a function in MetaMask where you can swap, but that doesn't actually happen inside MetaMask. They just route your order to somewhere. And that somewhere a lot of the times is us, because we have the most competitive prices. So that's going to be the strategy. We're going to increase, you know, the amount of chains we're on. We're going to the amount of assets we support, and the amount of like applications. It could be a wallet. It could be, you know, it could be some just like app, metaverse, NFT app that has crypto trading functions. And we'll, you know, we'll get a lot of volume from that. We also have these things called cross-chain swaps, where if you're on one blockchain, like let's call it Binance Smart Chain, and you want to put assets onto something like Avalanche, then you can do it directly through WooFi. And so we're seeing a lot of users who have this need. They're coming to us now. So I think the fact that we're, you know, if you continue to provide the best prices on a long-term time frame, like people are going to, eventually it's just going to become habitual where people just use that. So, you know, that's the attitude we're taking.
Do you think that's why you guys grew so fast in Avalanche versus like Polygon? Is just you're there or a little earlier? Like you were there like 7 months before you're on like Polygon, for example.
But the thing with chains like Avalanche is they're kind of what we call alternative layer ones. They're not places that people like to be all the time, mm-hmm. you know, like Ethereum is, right?
Right.
So on major assets, things like Bitcoin, Ethereum, USDT, how do you get people to put those assets onto these chains and then provide liquidity in these decentralized exchanges? It's very hard. You have to do it through giving away your token or whatever, and then that's inflationary, that's bad. So people weren't doing it, right? But because the way that we're able to do it is very capital efficient, it's easy for us to do. So during the bear market, I think a lot of the assets on these chains, we call it TVL, it's the amount of money basically on these chains started to dry up. And then that's when our strength become really apparent. And I think that played a huge role.
Definitely. Okay, now I'm going to get really in the weeds with you. Sorry, I'm a total Woo nerd here.
Let's go in the weeds.
So you guys have 800 million tokens that are vested, right? Or they're not vested. They are part of like mm-hmm. a community wallet. But they're in circulating supply. There's like 1.6 billion Woo in circulating supply, but these are not exactly in circulating supply. What's going on with these tokens, and is there any plan to deal with them?
I mean, well, at the beginning, the network had a very long time frame. You know, we wanted rewards to allow people to like grow and stake, and you know, some partnership. Maybe we need tokens, so you know, we had rewards for that. But then people were a little bit dissatisfied, as they rightly should be. It's like, you know, you have all these tokens, what are you going to do with them? So we ended up staking them in this 5-year time lock contract where we actually can't touch them. So they're technically, you know, in circulation because they belong to us, but we're not able to touch them. So, you know, this is something that was a very big issue at the beginning. It's like, how are you going to expand the token supply without inflating people? And so this is something we did to try to bring more clarity on that front.
I gotcha. That makes sense.
That wasn't very in the weeds, though. I thought you were going to go really in the weeds.
Sorry. I'll get really in the weeds. Let's go, bro.
Don't challenge him.
No. I don't want that.
Pick your brain for hours.
Well, I love this stuff. So, but
yeah.
Okay. Where do you see Woo in 2 years? Not to get too in the weeds.
Great question. No, I think the goal for us, right, is always around a couple of things. One is acquiring market share by volume, right? How much trade volume is happening through us versus happening through everyone else. So if we do our job right and we make the right decisions, then, you know, I do believe that we could be like a top three exchange, right, which is the top, right? And on the DeFi side, there's no question we could do something similar. Top three is a pretty elite group when you have things like Uniswap and Curve. Like these are the heavyweights, but I think we deserve to be in that discussion. So 2 years, like we say tier one for all of those. You know, I also expect that the value of the network denominated in the market cap should be a lot higher than it is now. I mean, if you look on CoinMarketCap, We're like 124th, but I think the value that we bring to users deserves, you know, without saying anything that might be misconstrued as me saying financial things will happen. I just think that the value we're providing to users is a lot higher than when you look at like what's the person right above us, what's the person two spots above us, and our opportunity, our potential, if we do become a top three CFI exchange or a top three DeFi exchange. So those are two metrics you could look at and say this is really going to improve. I shouldn't say improve. Just two metrics that we want to focus on. And household name, right? I want Steve. That's my personal goal. I want Steve to walk down the street in a chain and everyone goes, that guy was so early. He was such a genius.
It's happened one time. It's happened one time so far. Someone's like, yo, you know about Wu. I was like, you know about Wu. Holy shit. It's happened one time so far.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We'll get there. We're getting. It's a fight. It's a battle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love it. No. So just to piggyback on that real quick, has your vision for Wu shifted or kind of stayed the same? Like, obviously, the landscape's always moving. Mm-hmm. But since you guys started your mission statement, would you say that it's changed at all or is it sort of intact?
Yeah, absolutely. It changed a lot. Like we started out when I joined, we were kind of trying to be more of like a what we call B2B, business to business. Like, so if there's an exchange, we provide them liquidity on the back end. And that's it. We don't touch retail users. It's a much smaller fight to pick because everybody likes you. The regulators don't care about you, and that's fine. But the scope is scaled so much. And then DeFi happened while I was at the company. DeFi was not a thing when I joined. And so when we realized our talents were applied very well to DeFi, and then all of a sudden it became multi-chain DeFi. And then our talents even more applied. So, I mean, I think every year I get more and more excited about what we're doing. And even now with the kind of the reshuffling, like it wasn't clear maybe a year ago, like how were we ever going to compete with Binance? How are we ever going to compete with FTX? And not in like a, let's like take all their market share, but like, how can we, compete on like brand recognition and like marketing resources. Like they're buying crypto.com's buying the Staples Center. Like how are we ever going to get there? Right. Mm-hmm. But then the bear market just destroyed everyone's marketing budget. We found out finances were not as good as they were. Suddenly users had huge trust issues. And then it's like the whole thing kind of shuffled back the playing field to where it's a lot more even now. And so I do see a path forward that maybe wasn't so obvious, a year ago, to where that scenario I mentioned, where you walk down the street and everyone that visionary Steve, that could happen, you know, a lot sooner than I thought.
Bro, I just to wrap up with you. I'm very appreciative of mm-hmm. your time, by the way. Thank you for coming on with us. But I have to say, it's one of those things where I know I'm covered in Wu merch, so I really shouldn't get to speak from a neutral point of view. But you guys really did prove you do more walking than talking. I think like mm-hmm. when you guys burned, you know, 20% of your supply, or what was mm-hmm. it, 26% of the supply, 27%. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a pre-pump. Like you guys mm-hmm. really, I don't know what you're doing over there or like how you're doing it, but I haven't seen things like this in crypto typically, right? Normally I see a pre-pump. Mm-hmm. Oh, every time there's going to be a Coinbase listing, we see pre-pumps. You guys don't really do that. What's going on over there?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people ask me questions similar to this and like things like, you know, like, do you believe in what you're doing at Wu? Like, that's kind of the basic question. And I think my answer is always the same. It's like, if I didn't believe in the mission and I didn't believe that the people I was working alongside with are people I want to be on a mission with, then I would have left, you know, a long time ago, because it's actually the churn rate in crypto is very high. Like people would bounce around from job to job, and there's no shortage of opportunities because every 6 months there's this new next best thing startup, right? Ever since I joined, I think, you know, it helped that the founders came from a very experienced traditional finance background. So they're very aware of like legal systems and what things they can do and what things they can't do. And then they're also aware of, you know, they're not like people who are desperate. You know, maybe they see an opportunity to make a few bit of money on the side, right? And they're not as inclined to do that, right? They're thinking more big picture. How do we grow? How do we become one of the biggest companies in the world? So that to me really resonates. And actually, you know, a funny story about like a company, we have some advisors who sometimes, if we have internal decisions that we want to like discuss over, and these are people who have experienced at other exchanges or other businesses previously. And the one that we talked to recently listened to some of our challenges that we're working on in our strategy. And one of the first things she said when she walked out of the room was like, I'm really surprised by like the sense of ethics that everyone has at the team. Like it never once came up that, you know, let's just cut the corners and pipe the project. And, you know, like these are things that I think are very easy for short-term thinkers in crypto to do. It doesn't take a lot, you know, pay some influencer to hype your coin and then,
you don't gotta pay me, baby. I do it for free, baby, all day.
Yeah, we appreciate that. But I think that's the people we attract. That's the culture of the company. That's something I take pride in. And I think even if you look at Web2 companies, the arc, it wasn't the grifters that ended up winning out. It was the people who had a long-term vision and were very technically skilled and disciplined, right, that succeeded. So we expect the same thing to happen in crypto.
I love it. I appreciate you so much. And real quick, from my friends at WooForce, I do have many friends in WooForce. When merch, they asked me to ask you. When merch?
When merch?
This is a tricky one because we actually bring a lot of merch to events. So, you know, we're going to be doing some events around the world. I don't know if Vegas? We're doing any in Southern California. The whole U.S. thing, it's a bit tricky. Yeah.
International waters?
Yeah. But if the Iceman was to rock up to one of our events in Europe or something, then he would walk away with a very, very large handful of merch. Maybe we'll have to send him some merch as well.
Let's go. I think I've spent probably thousands and thousands of dollars on Woo merch, so that would be sick. I mean,
look at this sucker. Maybe I should be asking you for merch. That is amazing.
Yeah. I'm telling you. Well, you guys made this one. This one's you guys.
You're your merch distributor.
Yeah. But
credit to you guys on this one. Question.
Okay, we'll talk. Mm-hmm. We'll talk. But credit to you guys on this. This is like a quality garment. I love this thing very much. I have two of these.
A quality garment.
Yep.
I love it.
So that's all the time we got. Ben, do you want to do some closing thoughts for the folks?
How would you rate our performance, Nikki? Do you think we managed to pull it off and convince your users that crypto is not a scam?
I think, listeners? You know what? For those people who understand cryptocurrency, I think you did you both did a great job of addressing a lot of complex questions that I can only assume were the correct answers to. I do like hearing the passion behind. I mostly listen for, you know, the passion behind like where you see things going, you know, because just like, you know, Warren Buffett, even he'll say I'm, you know, what he's not well versed in. He's like, oh, I don't know anything about the computers or the internet, but it doesn't mean like, you know, he doesn't believe that they'll succeed. And so whenever I tell people that my husband's into cryptocurrency, I play a lot of poker. And so there's a lot of crossover between poker players and cryptocurrency people. And they ask,
all the way over here. Yeah.
We're in Vegas, by the way, too. DJ capital of the world. And they ask me about like, oh, what did you think about like this crash and blah, blah. I get the benefit of being on the outside mostly it doesn't affect me, but I don't have the emotions associated with it, because even though, you know, Steve had a lot of Terra Luna, I think overall when we have discussions, it's about where he sees the technology going, and that's more important to me than the short term crashes or results or whatever, because, you know, I learned a lot about like stocks and value trading versus day trading and all this, you know, options tradings and stuff. And I'm more interested in value investments, which I think Steve does a really good job at in the crypto space of doing a lot of research on the technologies behind a certain product, behind the coins that he buys. And he doesn't have actually a huge diversity in his portfolio of like a ton of different coins. He has like very specific projects where he like really believes in what's going on behind that technology wise. And so when I'm listening, I'm more interested in the vision of where a company sees the technology going and what they plan to, how they plan to change the marketplace and be part of the paradigm shift than me necessarily knowing all the technicalities behind how that operates. So I really appreciate you for coming on the show today and answering a lot of questions that I'm sure a lot of our audience understood, not me in particular, 100%. But I can understand on a human level. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to be on our podcast. I really appreciate mm-hmm. that.
Yeah, I'll have to look you guys up when I swing by Las Vegas next time.
Please
yeah.
do, bro.
Yeah,
I will
please.
Show you around. It'll be fun.
I'll have some drinks.
A couple San
poker?
Diego kids.
I do play poker, but probably not the
All
level
right.
that you do.
No,
She final tabled at World Series, bro. She's
did,
legit.
But I'll final table. I'll play cash 1-3 cash and have some
Against
Moscow
you,
mules. And a fun table in Aria.
Yeah,
or
she'll
something.
Take your money, Ben. No problem.
We'll play in crypto.
There was actually a crypto poker tournament probably last year. And Doug
yeah.
Polk was like one of the commentators.
Oh yeah. CoinFlex.
Yeah, I can't remember what the name was. I think I got 14th in that one.
Nice.
So, yeah. I think poker players, they end up transferring to crypto very easily. And,
dude,
yeah. and even with
insane.
Our team,
yeah.
there's some insane people. Some very good poker players within the team.
Sick.
That's awesome.
Yeah, bro.
We'll have to have a home game sometime.
mm-hmm. Awesome.
Thanks, Ben.
Thank you for having me.
Today's episode is brought to you by Angie. Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs and projects done well. Let me tell you, there's the version of it where you try to do something at home, and then there's a version of it where you have someone help you, you watch them do it the right way, and you go, thank God I didn't try to do that myself. I have fully done things around the home that I think look good, and then a bang in the night, and I wake up to a shelf collapsing, a painting falling off the wall. Like, I've seen it all go south. I own a home, and I can tell you, I know how much work it can take. Whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, you can Angie that and connect with skilled professionals to get the project done well. Right now, one of my wish lists is I want a bike for my condo in Milwaukee, and I would love to rig it up on a pulley in the ceiling because I have one of those like lofted ceilings, but I'm so scared to try that on my own. Angie has 20 years of home experience and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app. Answer a few questions and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.